This Twit News special comes to you from Twit's LastPass Studios. Stay in control when it comes to your company's access points and authentication. LastPass makes enterprise-level security simple for your remote workforce. Check out LastPass.com/Twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twit News Special number 357, recorded Monday, June 22nd, 2020, WWDC State of the Union. This Twit News Special is brought to you by LastPass. Prepare for the unexpected in your business with LastPass, trusted by over 17 million users and 61,000 businesses worldwide. Visit LastPass.com/Twit to find out how they can help you. Welcome to yet another Twit Live special. We didn't expect to do this, but we want to stream the WWDC State of the Union because I feel like there's so much news Apple had to share this morning at the keynote WWDC, particularly about the shift to Apple Silicon. I want to see more. So as soon as we can, let's pull up that feed. I am, as you can tell, at home now. You can see my mask-making workshop right behind me, including my sewing machine. So I apologize for the messy background, but I wanted to watch this. I figured I'm going to watch it. I thought we should watch this together. I have the chat room open. So chat room, your comments will be much appreciated. And I guess they're a little bit behind because we're a minute late for the start. So there we go. Here we go. Go ahead and play that, and let's get going.
Massive leaps forward. One of the most exciting announcements of this year's WWDC is, of course, the transition of the Mac product line to our own Apple Silicon.
They're going right to ARM.
Which will propel the Mac into an amazing new future. The new Mac OS Big Sur, in addition to supporting these low-level changes in hardware, has an all-new look and feel to go along with them, making it an entirely new operating system inside and out. Similarly, iPadOS 14 has a refined look and feel that makes the iPad experience even more distinct and powerful with improvements
typically
to many apps and support.
State of the Union keynotes are more technical. They're aimed more
in
directly
iOS
at developers.
14, users can now interact with your apps
and
in exciting
one of the
new ways
we're
by creating widgets that run right on their home screen. And they can discover apps directly in the moment of need with lightweight app clips without having to download the entire app first. And in the new watchOS 7, you can build a whole set of flexible complications to surface up-to-date information to your users. From the big screen of the Mac to the iPhone you hold in your hand, every product is carefully designed to have amazing, unique experiences that users love. But for developers, we are making our frameworks and APIs, and even the design language in our user interfaces more and more consistent, making it easier than ever for you to create a great user experience across all types of Apple devices. All the system features are supported by a huge number of new APIs for you developers, all with first-class support in the Xcode tools and many of them based on Swift UI, which is one of the most important foundations we use.
They didn't even mention Swift.
You're also constantly working
earlier, Kina. This is Andreas Wenker, who is the Vice President of Software Engineering.
You might recall that a few years ago, we introduced extensions, a way for your apps to customize our operating system functionality. Since then, we've been adding plugins for share sheets, VoIP calling, rich notifications, and more. Starting this year, users can make your app the default app used for email in iOS and iPadOS. And users can change the default web browser too. And developers can bring the existing web browser extensions to Safari for Mac using the Web Extensions API. With a simple command
like
that is shipping with our Xcode tools, you can now bring extensions over from Chrome, Firefox, and Edge as privacy-preserving Safari extensions and ship them in the Mac App Store.
That's interesting. That's a big deal because, of course, most of the extensions are for Chrome. The ability to port them easily to Safari would be very good for the extension ecosystem.
Find My is a huge end-to-end encrypted and anonymous network of over 500 million Apple devices that can be used to locate a missing Mac, iPhone, iPad, or Apple Watch, even if it can't be connected to the internet, and show the location to the owner right in the Find My app. It works great for your Apple devices. And it's perfectly suited to locate all kinds of other objects as well.
Oh, maybe tags.
And to see the draft specification that is available today, go to developer.apple.com.
Notice keys and purses as cameras.
We better dive right in, starting with the Mac's transition to our own Apple Silicon. Using Apple Silicon inside Macs is an amazing new direction for the future. It will open the door for huge improvements to speed, graphics performance, power consumption, security, and more. And unifying architectures across our product lines will allow us to bring unmodified iPhone and iPad apps to the Mac for the first time.
That's a very interesting piece.
We've been working on it for several years, and we are so happy with the result. It's going to be awesome.
We don't need Catalyst anymore. You just put your apps right on it.
Big Sur running on a Mac with Apple Silicon. Here's Finder with the applications folder. Mail and messages are fully
functional.
The
chip they're using on this is identical to the chip in the iPad Pro, the A12Z Bionic. And it's pretty snappy. They fooled us. They do have 16 gigs of RAM in this machine. This is the Mac, I think the Mac Mini that they're sending to developers.
So is reading news.
But it's pretty snappy. It does, and this is something they're going to really emphasize, I think, is speed. You heard Andres say that, but he'll say it again and again.
Same for my music and podcasts. Productivity apps like iWorks, Pages, Numbers, and Keynote run great. And this is one of the most demanding Pro apps, Final Cut Pro, with real-time rendering of several movie streams. And Logic, our music creation powerhouse, easily keeping up with large projects.
This is huge.
We already worked with a number of our partners to bring the apps to Apple Silicon as well. Here's Adobe Photoshop, already taking advantage of the new architecture and running fast on this new Mac. And Microsoft has brought up their Office apps, such as Word and Excel. Of course, our developer tools also work great on Apple Silicon and can be used to create native apps. And as you can see here in Activity Monitor, when we say Big Sur and all the software is running great on Apple Silicon, we really mean it. Every single bit of code you just saw is 100% native. The entire suite of system apps, Apple productivity and pro apps, developer tools, and even the first versions of third-party software packages like the Adobe Creative Cloud and Microsoft Office. So we are already far along in our move to Apple Silicon. But you might be wondering why we are making this transition. The reason is simple. We want to build the best Macs possible for our users, and we can't build them without our own processors. The hardware innovations that have taken place in the mobile device space and the extremely tight integration of the iOS software and the Apple Silicon have led to amazing user features and behaviors that other platforms cannot offer to this day. Now, all the energy we put into refining iOS for Apple Silicon for years and years will come back to macOS in the form of shared operating system components and frameworks, and this will take the Mac to the next level.
Huge.
Because just like code written for the Mac originally served as the foundation for iOS more than 10 years ago, we can now take everything we learned about optimizing iOS and make the Mac amazing when running on Apple Silicon.
And this benefit going in both directions for iOS and macOS is something we didn't really anticipate. The fact that you could run iOS apps on macOS, the fact that you could take some of the things macOS is doing better and move that to iOS. You can see this, I hate to use the word, but that's the word synergy that you're getting here.
To give us some insight into how this happens in practice, I'm going to have a short chat with my colleague Shree from our Silicon team. And just like you, for the last few months, I've been having a lot more FaceTime calls, so I'm going to call him in the lab.
This is obviously pre-recorded. That's okay, though. The information is what we really care about.
Hey, I'm good. Thank you. And thanks for taking the time to talk with us. During the keynote, Johnny gave us the motivation behind the families of chips we've been building over the last decade. Could you quickly give our developers the high points?
Sure. We've been building many different chips for our products for the past decade. And one of the key ideas when we build chips is that we really focus on what's truly important for each product. For example, in the iPhone, we needed to deliver a level of performance that had never been seen in a battery-powered device that small. For the iPad, it started with driving...
But battery's not an issue on macOS. On the other hand, TPU, total power is, and if you can get more chips in a single enclosure with the same amount of power consumption, there's a real speed benefit. And I think that's what they're going to do.
...that powered each of these chips and helped make each of these products best in class. And we haven't stopped. We continue to improve the architecture and drive performance and efficiency while building industry-leading features. We also executed to scale. When you look across all of our products, we've shipped over 2 billion SoCs over the past decade. And not only that, billions of additional chips to enable our products.
And meanwhile, they've been waiting and waiting for Intel.
...for the Mac to Apple Silicon.
That's for sure. So what exactly are you building for the Mac?
Well, we're building a family of SoCs designed specifically for the Mac. Just like we did for the iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch, we're making sure the chips we build are tailored to the unique needs of the Mac. And practically speaking, that's going to mean we're going to bring to the Mac a whole new level of performance. Our scalable architecture that I've already mentioned translates really well to running the types of application we see on the Mac.
This is the reassurance developers need, because the perception is ARM is slow. It's not, but that's the perception. And so they're going to really emphasize this.
A variety of application and application traces, because we always want to build the best chips possible. So this really sets the stage well for the Mac.
Oh, it sure does. Now, you mentioned performance. How do power and energy efficiency play into all of this?
That's a good question. The iPhone really taught us that energy efficiency and performance are tightly intertwined. In the most thermally and power-constrained devices, you need to improve energy efficiency. And that means to add performance without increasing power. And that's not as easy as it sounds. All of the technologies we've built over the past decade have focused on this one paradigm. And it turns out that same discipline and focus, that paradigm translates really quite well to the Mac. All the systems built today are constrained by thermals, power consumption, or both. So that's true
Less
for the
so
Mac,
on the Mac,
just as it is for the iPhone. Though obviously we're talking about a whole different range of power consumption. For any given Mac system...
As Alex C. says in the chat room, there are 80 core ARM chips running at 3 gigahertz in data centers. So we know that's possible. And with Apple Silicon, anything's possible.
Each of these enclosures. And that's made possible thanks to that relentless focus on efficiency or performance per watt over the years.
Well, that's great to hear. Can you tell us a little more about what else will come along with this transition?
Sure. The feature story for the Mac is also a great one. Remember, we built highly integrated SoCs, which include a number of features and technologies that are critical in enabling our products. We built these technologies for the iPhone and iPad Pro, and they're coming along in this transition to Apple.
Apple did make a liquid-cooled Mac at one point.
Our display and media processing engines, our ISP, our secure enclave, advanced power management are all examples of industry-leading technologies that we're bringing to the Mac. And for the first time, the Mac will have a dedicated inference accelerator for machine learning applications with a neural engine coming over to the Mac. Of course, one of the things I'm most excited about is that we're bringing a high-performance GPU architecture to the Mac. We've already seen our GPU architecture do really well in the iPhone and iPad Pro. And in the Mac, this architecture is going to be great for pro application and games.
Well, I'm sure a lot of macOS developers are eager to get their hands on these new Macs. What does the transition mean for developers who build for our other platforms?
Yeah, I think this point is a very important one for our developers. This transition will give our developers a common architecture behind all of our products. So whether you're building software for the Apple Watch, iPhone, iPad Pro, and now the Mac, there's a unified, scalable architecture behind all of them, which should make
there's,
it easier
again,
to write
a lot of benefit to doing that
across all of our platforms. It really is a really exciting time.
It really sounds great. Thank you, Sri, for taking the time to talk with me.
Thanks, Andreas. Hope you and our developers have a great WWDC.
Yeah, see you later. So as you
Not
heard,
a FaceTime
there
call.
Are countless ways Apple Silicon creates a better computing platform for the Mac. Going forward, software can take advantage of the amazing silicon features we built, such as the unified memory architecture, which lets the GPU access memory without delay, the neural engine for blazingly fast machine learning applications, and the secure enclave that safely stores users' keys. And all that will provide users with more powerful everyday experiences than ever before. Let me give you some examples of this. The advanced power efficiency of Apple processors will let us keep cached cloud content fresh and up-to-date for days, even if your Mac goes to sleep. Or we'll be able to run a higher-quality, hardware-supported 444 encoder for even better image quality when connecting your Mac to an iPad with Sidecar. Or users will be able to experience the best-in-class platform security pioneered by
You can see
Apple.
The benefit for a laptop right away.
Integrity and data
the question is the Mac Pro. What would you do to make an Apple Silicon Mac Pro?
macOS. And performance will be off the charts in many areas. In particular, the Apple Silicon Unified Memory Architecture, powerful GPUs, and our highly optimized Metal APIs are going to allow for responsive, complex image editing workflows, such as the one you see here in Affinity Photo. Or Cinema 4D, an app optimized for Metal for real-time interactive 3D editing and modeling.
Metal, of course, the key, that's the hardware abstraction layer in graphics for all Macs.
Apple Silicon is going to have that powerful GPU and Metal implementation, making Macs a fantastic platform for running games like
Dirt Rally. You don't care what the GPU is. And bye-bye, this is bad, by the way, bad for Radeon, for AMD, too.
Machine learning applications so much faster. Here you can see a
demonstration. Kind of explains why Apple hasn't spent any effort at all in integrating NVIDIA. They knew this was coming.
Each frame's image content. On Apple Silicon, the video runs super fast on the GPU, and the machine learning model gets evaluated separately by the neural engine. As you can easily see, the neural engine allows for a whole new experience. And a Mac with an Apple SoC finished the task much quicker. And yet, with all the new capabilities and advantages that Apple Silicon offers, there's one thing that certainly stays the same. Macs will stay Macs the way you know and love them.
Macs
will stay
Macs.
They will run the same powerful Pro apps.
Okay.
They will offer the same developer APIs Macs have today.
They're going to be able to do this a lot faster than anybody thought. They're saying 2 years.
System versions, and they will let users boot from external drives. They will support drivers for peripherals. And they will be amazing Unix machines for developers and the scientific community that can run any software they like.
Thank you.
How are we going to approach this transition? Well, with this WWC, we are launching an entire quick start program that will enable you to bring your Mac apps to the new architecture.
Similar to what they did with the Intel transition.
Apple Silicon will offer. We'll provide you with all the tools, documentation, and even prototype hardware you will need. And several of the videos from this year's WWDC will provide you with a guide for how to get started. Starting today, we'll even make a developer transition kit, or DTK, available to you. The DTK looks like an existing Mac Mini, but it's completely different inside. It runs on an A12Z processor, the same chip that powers our current generation iPad Pros. The current preview version of macOS Big Sur will be pre-installed on it, as well as a version of our latest Xcode tools with the capability to create apps that run on both Apple Silicon.
Interesting. I doubt Catalina would do that. Would run well, right? So they're going to go Big Sur.
The DTK is a prototype, though, and not fully representative of the hardware we will actually ship to customers. There are some software features that will not be supported on it, but it does have everything you need to get started on supporting Apple Silicon. To apply for access to a DTK, simply go to developer.apple.com later today and register for the Quick Start program. We'll be shipping out DTKs to you as early as this week.
Wow.
And so the transition actually starts today, and it starts with you, the software developers. We expect to ship our first Macs with Apple Silicon by the end of the year. And that
means you have
to get your software ready for it quickly over the next several months. And the best way to do this is to create a universal app.
This is the lesson they learned with this 32 to 64 bit.
We've made it really
they
easy
took to too long to do it, and as a result, too many apps weren't ready when Catalina came out. They're not going to make that mistake again. They're saying, we've got hardware coming now. You better get ready.
The two binaries become slices in a single executable. And the operating system chooses
the right one. And this is exactly what they did with the Intel transition.
The hardware architecture
well,
of the Mac
the universal
the user is running on. Everything else in the app is the same. All the resources, such as images and machine learning models.
They did say earlier today that they're going to still have some Intel Macs to show off over the next year, and that it's going to be a 2-year transition. But I have to think, Ming-Chi Kuo, who said there will be a laptop, a 13-inch MacBook Pro this year with Apple Silicon, and all Apple Macs will ship next year with Apple Silicon. I have to think he's on track with this.
For most apps, all it takes to create a universal version is opening your project in the latest version of Xcode. And building. Let's take a look. During development, Xcode builds my app just for the native architecture
still
of my
have,
machine.
Everything's still named NS,
getting started on a DTK is
which
a
stands for next step.
To launch my app natively on Apple Silicon.
That is legacy.
To create a universal version, Xcode offers a new AnyMac option. This app is using the standard architecture's build setting, which automatically includes Apple Silicon and Intel. So I can select this option, and I'm ready to
target
universal
silicon.
For the rare
Apple
case
silicon.
Where I'm not using standard architectures, the menu lets me know. Here I can see I previously set my framework to build just for Intel. When I build my framework for any Mac,
Rosetta is a
Xcode will recommend
virtualization framework that Rosetta 2 will allow you to run even if it's Intel compiled.
Now I have a universal version.
You can turn most Mac apps and frameworks into universal binaries with very little effort. This is true for low-level libraries and Mac apps that were created with our Mac system frameworks, such as AppKit and SwiftUI, but equally so for apps created with Mac Catalyst. While Catalyst uses a different set of frameworks that utilizes UIKit APIs instead
of even need Catalyst. APIs,
they are native apps, compiled for the Mac platform just like any other Mac app, and so they too will easily turn into universal apps when building them in Xcode. For many apps, this work will only take a few engineering days. Even for some of the most complex software packages, we've generally seen that it only takes a few weeks to get a full version up and running. In fact, as you've seen earlier, we've already ported all of Apple's system apps, iWork, enterprise management tools, and Pro apps, and worked with a number of important partners to get them started and to prove out our tools and the porting process leading up to this WWDC. And the results have been amazing. Even Pro apps such as Final Cut Pro or Adobe Photoshop run beautifully on Apple Silicon. These apps represent some of the most advanced and mature software packages running on the Mac platform, supporting the most demanding needs of Pro users. And we found consistently that adding support for Apple Silicon went quickly and problem-free. We're also passionate about making sure that open source projects thrive on the Mac, especially if they benefit the larger software developer community and can help accelerating the port of other software packages. So we have already done the initial work for some of the more widely used open source projects to help the community get started.
Mac ports, that's huge.
And we'll be publishing patches to them in the next days.
Mono, Chromium.
Another important partner we've been working with.
You freeze frame that one too.
Unity is an industry-leading platform for creating interactive real-time 3D content. It is used by millions of developers to make games and apps that run across Apple's iPhones, iPads, Apple TVs, and Macs. Now, we've been working with them, and within just a few weeks, they were able to update their powerful 3D editing and game development tools to take full advantage of the power, performance, and features of the new Macs built with Apple Silicon.
I'm trying to figure out if this is a set artist, or this is actually the labs. I think it might actually be the labs, but it's awfully clean. So let's see. I love these chairs.
Here, we have loaded Unity's Spaceship demo project into the 3D editor, and it's all running on a Mac with Apple Silicon. We can edit our content, our geometry, our textures, shading, even our lighting, and much more.
It feels a little slow, right? A little hesitant.
This is Unity's high-definition render pipeline, which uses Metal to drive the Apple-designed GPU in these systems and delivers the advanced rendering
features
required to run modern
iPads. He's running it on an effect. This is an iPad with 16 gigs of RAM.
These effects we're seeing here can be created using the VFX Graph, an artist-friendly tool set that makes it really easy to create complex effects that can be rendered right on the GPU. Now that we're done editing our project, we can make a build of our Spaceship app. The Unity editor has also been updated to build universal apps. So now, with just one click, you can build your game to run great on both existing Intel-based Macs and the new Macs.
Yeah, this
with
might
Apple
have another
Silicon.
Benefit, which is bye-bye Hackintosh.
Now that we built our Spaceship demo app, let's see it running on a Mac with Apple Silicon. Here, we can see how Unity's runtime engine uses Metal's modern graphics and compute pipeline and unified memory architecture to deliver advanced rendering techniques such as volumetric lighting, ambient occlusion, and real-time
reflections. Honestly, this looks like crap, but
because Unity's runtime has already been optimized for Metal and the Apple-designed GPU, your games will automatically run with the full native graphics performance on the Mac with Apple Silicon. Next month, Unity plans to release a preview version of their software with support for Macs with Apple SoCs, so you can get started right away building your games as universal apps. And later year, Unity plans to release a production version of the editor, runtime, and tools to enable you to easily create, build, and ship your games optimized for both existing Intel-based Macs and those with Apple Silicon.
I want to thank our
powerful tools
friends
like
at LastPass for letting
wait
us
to see all of the
do even more coverage of WWDC
to
today
create.
With This is the State of the Union, which is going on as live in the Monday afternoon.
Games built native for Macs with Apple Silicon are going to be great. But if your software needs a little more time,
that's an Xbox
an end user
controller.
Who relies on software that's not been ported natively in Apple Silicon, macOS Big Sur will include a new version of our emulation software, Rosetta 2. This provides compatibility for existing Mac software. Now, Rosetta 2 is just an amazing technology written from the ground up for Apple SoCs, allowing existing Intel apps to run seamlessly alongside your native apps. It's able to take Intel executables and translate them into native ARM instructions. Rosetta uses a number of advanced techniques to let binaries run very fast, even during emulation. This is especially true for Metal, where Rosetta produces native calls to the GPUs built into Apple SoCs.
Oh, that's
even
good.
High-end games execute with incredible performance. Another
this
major
is
technology
emulation.
Is ahead-of-time compilation, so that nearly all applications are translated before you even launch them. And if you use macOS packages or the App Store to distribute your software, Rosetta will translate the application in the background during the install. All others are translated on first launch. And if you dynamically load code yourself,
they have a just-in-time, as they mentioned like in the keynote, just-in-time translation.
Will be translated on the fly.
There it
is. All code generated is optimized for Apple Silicon and tuned for our high-performance CPUs. Now, we've completely integrated Rosetta into macOS Big Sur, so there's no need for any special setup.
And when comes system with calls Big Sur. Are
executed, they're translated into native calls to the kernel.
They Rosetta are so ready for this. Secure,
with all its caches integrated with system code signing, bound to your specific machine and OS version. And we're including Rosetta in macOS Big Sur as a transitional technology to give you time to complete support for Macs with Apple Silicon
no mention
at
of
your
Cocoa.
Own pace. Let's dig into the technology with some quick demos.
That's one question I have.
Starting
is Cocoa done?
Running on a Mac with Apple Silicon. I've selected to run under Rosetta.
I guess not.
And Xcode builds my app the same way it would for an Intel Mac, but then launches it under Rosetta. You don't need to configure a special debug mode to work in this environment, which is a real enhancement for Rosetta 2. So here we are using the app, able to interact with it as you'd expect. And I've hit a breakpoint. The familiar tools for development, including debugging, static analysis, testing, and more, are available. I can even use the Memory Graph debugger to browse objects.
Uh-huh.
Let's load the Memory Graph. It takes just a moment. And it works like you'd expect. So Xcode can build and run my app for both Rosetta and Apple Silicon. Now let's look at Rosetta running third-party apps, starting with the app Transmit running under Rosetta. I'm going to connect
this
to OneDrive and download
FTP
some drone footage
client.
That I've taken. We have an emulated version of all the macOS frameworks running alongside the emulation of the apps in the same process. So I'm going to simply download the file. Because Rosetta isn't running in a special container, file system and network access are just like any other app. Okay, let's
this
take
is
a
very
closer
similar
look
to the Rosetta 1 that they did for the Intel unit, transition.
Starting with Dirt Rally, which really shows off some great features of Rosetta. The translation cache was built during the install from the Mac App Store, completely transparently, which means there's no glitches due to a need to translate new blocks of code. As is really important for games with motion and real-time audio requirements. And things just work. Even this game controller that I really need to be able to stay on the road here. And the CPU instructions have been translated very accurately, whereas the graphics commands are sent through to the native GPU. There's simply no frame drops or lags on the controls. It's amazing. Okay, now let's look at a pro app, Affinity Photo, which really helps show off that emulation has very little memory overhead.
Yeah, this is a little shot at Adobe.
I've got this huge 82 megapixel image loaded here. There's no additional memory overhead for having such a large file open under Rosetta.
Wow.
And because the translation cache is file-backed, just like the original executable, there's little additional overhead here too. And we didn't just focus on the speed of translation.
You don't want to be too good. You want to encourage Serif and Adobe to make sure that they port this to Apple Silicon, but boy, this is pretty good. It's a good interim.
Saving a file is an all-native operation through our optimized storage stack. The emulation doesn't add any copies or buffering. Coupled with native Metal, I'm able to apply these effects quickly and save them just as fast. Rosetta 2 is wickedly fast, transparent to users, and completely integrated into macOS Big Sur. It's a great transitional technology that will give you time to migrate your apps to support Macs with Apple Silicon. What about code other than apps? For example, app extensions can be built as universal binaries too. And since extensions run out of process from the host app, Rosetta can even emulate extensions when they're being used with a native host app.
Wow.
So end users can rely on extensions to continue working on Macs with Apple Silicon while you work on porting them to run natively. And other standard plugin architectures such as audio units run out of process under Rosetta too. Drivers utilizing the DriverKit API introduced in macOS Catalina are in the same situation.
They've been moving in this direction very clearly for years now. They knew this was coming, and they're pretty ready for it.
That way, you can create a universal driver that will support all Macs. We will continue to shrink the surface area for kernel extensions, replacing them with safer APIs going forward. And while we will continue to support running kernel extensions on macOS, you can't run them in emulation. And the increased security we offer on Apple SoCs will require all KEX to be notarized.
Of course,
DriverKit
as they should
be. DriverKit offers a much better alternative with less friction for the end user, and we highly recommend you adopt it in all situations possible.
Yeah, one Apple's been trying to get people off kernel extensions for some time.
Is for virtualization products. The Mac is the world's best developer platform. Many developer workflows require using tools from different platforms or performing server deployments. To meet these needs, many of you spin up virtual machines running different operating systems or lightweight containers like Docker.
Docker. Yeah.
We know that this is critical to your work and important we support these needs. That's why we've been working hard with our partners to support virtual machines on Macs with Apple Silicon. As you saw in the keynote, we started working with
Parallels.
And I want to walk you through an early port of Parallels Desktop for Mac, running on the Apple hypervisor that's been updated for Apple Silicon. This is running on a
This is key, too. Intel has a hypervisor, and it's very widely used. So if you're going to do this, you've got to provide a similar functionality.
Remember, this doesn't require any third-party kernel extensions to be installed.
And containers are really the future.
And started a new project with Vapor, a Swift web framework you may be familiar with. Let's go ahead and build our new project. And then we'll start
the
server.
Virtualization is less important than containerization these days, but you've got to do both.
I'd like to be able to test this from Safari in macOS. And we have Webmin installed to help manage this machine. And Apache configured to proxy port 80 of the VM to the local Vapor server. So let's start it. Now we can go into Safari in macOS and see how it looks there. It looks great. These environments can interact due to features built into macOS Big Sur. And thanks to the hypervisor framework with complete support for networking, storage, input devices, and much more. Virtualization technology is used by container solutions such as Docker. And we know it's incredibly important for many of you, as it's very common for server-side development and testing. So we'll be working with Docker to enable this in the coming months. We've mentioned before that this transition puts Apple platforms on a common architecture. And one of the coolest benefits of this is the ability to run software originally built for iPhone and iPad.
I doubt very much they make the people in the lab sit in those chairs.
Let's take a look at how that works.
Just point of order. They're beautiful.
As you may have guessed, the technology that enables running iPhone and iPad apps on Macs with Apple Silicon is the same technology that enables Mac Catalyst.
Now we find out about
Catalyst. Catalyst is an implementation of the iOS frameworks for macOS, the same APIs made for Mac. And these frameworks, when running on a Mac with Apple Silicon, are even binary compatible. This makes it possible to run many iPhone and iPad apps without any kind of change. Unmodified iOS apps, however, will not get all the customizations that Catalyst apps can offer. In particular, it's worth pointing out that running unmodified apps will only be possible on Macs with Apple Silicon, not on Intel-based Macs. So you may want to check that Catalyst box in Xcode and start making your app even better for your Mac users. We are planning to make unmodified iPhone and iPad apps available in the Mac App Store once we launch our Macs with Apple Silicon.
So important.
In fact, all the apps that users purchased on iPhone and iPad that are eligible to run on the Mac will simply show up as purchases in the Mac App Store as well. You, the developer, will have total control over whether you wish to participate. But we believe this will be a great addition for Mac users for apps that don't
already
offer a native Mac
deprecated.
Version. Now,
it's still
let's
needed.
Look at an iPad game. Monument Valley. This app is the exact same one available in the iOS App Store.
This is the iOS binary running on
appears in the dock like
a Mac on Apple Silicon.
I can minimize and reopen the window.
I think for a lot of developers,
menu
that's
bar
a big deal.
It's an important part of the Mac experience. And iOS apps get a menu bar
and
generated automatically.
It's really good for end users because you don't have an iPad, iOS, and Mac version of your apps.
In the app menu as well. You will notice preferences
it's not necessary
here, which
anyway.
Puts up an in-app preferences panel automatically created from your app's iOS settings bundle. Also hide, and even quit, which is a thing on the Mac. Let's hide our other apps and get back to the game. We have our beautiful graphics. Mouse clicks are mapped.
So this
to
is
tabs.
Not Catalyst. This is just
I
the native Monument Valley.
I can zoom in as expected on the trackpad. I can click and drag to rotate.
But it's not surprising because effectively that's Mac Mini is an iPad Pro with a little more RAM, a lot more RAM.
The application on the Mac is in the applications folder by default. But as a user, I can rename it or move it out to desktop, say, if I wish. On iOS, apps are installed and launched from system-managed app containers and are not used to having their paths arbitrarily modified. To achieve our users' expectations while also remaining compatible with the apps, we play a couple of tricks. First, we have a new app bundle format, which wraps your application as is. This allows the user-visible app to be freely renamed or moved. Second, to ensure that apps are launched as compatibly as possible, we use a feature we introduced in macOS Sierra called App Translocation. This allows the iOS app to be efficiently launched from a sanitized path that is not affected by the user's actions.
Let's look Spaces at have historically been a problem in path names. That might be what they're sanitizing.
While Monument Valley is an example of a nice, pure gaming experience, Documents is a productivity tool that uses a number of advanced iOS features. It's a good example of how these come across on the Mac. For instance, this application supports iPad multitasking, which means the window on the Mac is automatically resizable.
Wow.
I can even go into full screen. As you see here, we have macOS scrollers, and I can scroll with two fingers on the trackpad. The app automatically adjusts to macOS appearance, dark.
Wow.
And back to light.
This is a native iOS app.
And since this app supports multiple windows on the iPad, it also does so on the Mac. From within the app, I can access resources on the Mac, such as my Photos library. Accessing other files brings up a native macOS open panel. Here, for example, is a PDF file. iOS apps can also automatically make use of macOS share services, such as the
These
ability
are unmodified
to bring up
iOS apps.
Compose share sheet for email
This shows
content.
How long they've been planning this.
I want to show you one more thing, that extensions in your iOS apps work where appropriate on the Mac. Let's open Photos, choose a photo, and edit it. I have an iOS app installed, and it provides a Photos editing extension. This extension automatically appears in Photos extension list. I can choose it and enhance my photo. That's amazing.
That's mind-boggling.
Using an extension provided by an iOS app, as is in the Mac Photos app.
Compare that to Android and Chrome OS, and you'll see this is a hard thing to do.
Users will love the flexibility to run these apps.
Clearly, Apple's been abstracting all of these system calls for some time.
It takes just a few extra steps to unlock more customization and refinement of your app for the Mac through Catalyst.
Yeah, you can see you're not going to have touch, so you got to imagine some different scenarios.
They take advantage of the most advanced and power-efficient chip technology, offering unprecedented power per watt performance and incredible graphics speed. And they run a wealth of software, ranging from native universal apps fully optimized for Apple Silicon, to Rosetta-emulated apps not yet ported from Intel Macs, to apps from other environments running in virtualization, all the way to unmodified iPhone and iPad apps. We are looking forward to opening the next chapter for the Mac and seeing how you take it to the next level by leveraging the benefits of Apple Silicon.
This is extremely good for the Macintosh.
And now, let's talk about macOS Big Sur. Beyond support for Apple Silicon, Big Sur is a huge software release to go along with the transformative hardware changes we are announcing.
I feel
this
like
release is packed with new capabilities.
There's been a lot going on in secret. We knew this for a long time, but Apple is revealing how much work's been going on. This is years.
The new look and feel of macOS Big Sur eliminates visual clutter in the user interface and gives the Mac an air of freshness.
This I'm less
And as you'll see in a moment, we've brought the best designs from each of our platforms together. We've created a family resemblance between iPadOS and macOS
while retaining
the power and flexibility of the Mac.
Apps moving back and forth.
This similarity makes it easy for users to transition between our devices while making Mac Catalyst and iPhone and iPad apps naturally feel at home on the Mac. Starting with the dock, we see a main theme of macOS Big Sur. The dock is rounded and floats above the bottom of the screen slightly. The dock corners echo a curvature of a new design for app icons, which all conform to a standard shape. We'll provide templates for you to design your icons to match. Control Center has come to the Mac, providing easy access to system controls. And Notification Center has a whole new look, built completely with Swift UI. Notifications and widgets are now shown simultaneously rather than being
sequestered. So now we see, they didn't really address this in the previous keynote, but now we see why all this translucency, why this very different look. It both macOS and iOS and iPadOS are kind of emerging, at least in look and feel. That makes a lot of sense.
The menu bar floats atop your desktop picture, and the selection floats within it. Menus have a refined layout, and menu selection echoes the rounded theme. In the Finder, we see a new design for document icons. You can customize your own document icons by simply providing an image and text. macOS will automatically position the elements, mask them, and apply the page curl. Sheets come up in a new way. They no longer roll out of the toolbar, but instead float above the window in a rounded platter.
Yeah, the they've been thinking about this a lot.
Reinforcing
so they didn't really explain
the
all these new changes in Big Sur, all the new appearance changes. They didn't really say why, but now it makes a lot of sense.
The sidebar is a visually distinct vertical element. Your windows will automatically adopt this new structure if you are using a toolbar, a full-size content view, and a split-view controller with sidebar styling. Mac Catalyst and Swift UI windows receive a full-size content view by default. There are a number of major styling changes in the toolbar. It's taller, and the window title is vertically in line with the toolbar controls. The inline title hides its document icon until you roll over it.
This isn't Mac native. This is like, we're going to look like other operating systems.
To the right, except the navigation items, which remain leftmost in the toolbar. You can designate a toolbar item to be navigational. Toolbar controls have a new large size and show their backing when you roll over them. The search field collapses into a glyph when the toolbar is space constrained and expands out to a full field when in use.
Not surprised. We're going to see more of these affordances for the trackpad on iOS in macOS. Not a surprise.
There's additional toolbar structure if you have a three-pane layout like Mail. The Mail toolbar is split into two sections with controls corresponding to the message list positioned over that pane and controls corresponding to the conversation view positioned there. We've added Toolbar API to AppKit and Mac Catalyst to express this separation. Swift UI toolbars attached to navigation view panes get automatic separators. As you can tell, the toolbar has gained a lot of new functionality. If you aren't already using NS Toolbar, now is a great time to start. Images in both toolbar and sidebar are provided via SF symbols. There are thousands of SF symbols now available on the Mac, and we are using them widely. SF symbols can be configured to perfectly match the size and weight of text. In the sidebar, the symbols seamlessly adapt to provide correctly sized and styled images when I change my sidebar icon size. Controls have a brand new look as well, shown here in the System Preferences pop-up and radio buttons. Sliders, progress indicators, and other controls have also been updated with a fresh new look. We are really embracing color in this release. We've given your applications a mechanism to define an app-specific accent color by providing a color name in your plist. This affects not just sidebar icons, but also selection color and the color of standard controls.
Mail that usually uses a blue or has been color. In the past system-wide.
We've gone even further with the color theme, giving apps a way to assign colors to individual sidebar items to delineate functionality. In the Mail sidebar, the VIP items are coded yellow, smart mailboxes are monochrome, and local mailboxes are teal. The combination of color through tinting and shape through SF symbols contributes to great sidebar design. Notes is another example of app-specific accent color. Here, the yellow branding of Notes comes alive in the list selection and text highlighting. We hope you enjoy choosing an accent color for each of your apps that expresses its unique personality. As you can tell, every little detail of the Mac has been made fresh and modern, and there are many opportunities for your own applications to participate.
Very interesting.
Big Sur feels really fantastic, and Mac Catalyst apps also look better than ever before. We continue to improve this technology with every release, and we continue to prove out the implementation in our own apps before making it available to you. Catalyst is basically a Mac-specific implementation of the iOS APIs, most notably UIKit.
When I look over here, I'm looking at the chat.
We recommend Swift UI and AppKit if you want to take full advantage of the Mac's capabilities. This technology makes it very easy to bring iPadOS apps to the Mac with a single shared code base to support all iPhones, iPads, and Macs. This year, we're making a number of improvements that will make the experience with Catalyst apps even better. Some features require a small amount of adoption work on your part, but you get even better results.
We're watching the second part of the WWDC kickoff. This is the second keynote. They call it the State of the Union. Traditionally, the more technical of the two, and a lot of it has been about the transition from Intel to Silicon from Apple. And this is a big transition, but Apple seems well prepared for it. And a lot of what they've been talking about, even down to the Big Sur user interface design, is really all about this transition. and kind of merging iPhone, iPad OS, and Mac OS. We thank our friends at LastPass for making this possible. They're very flexible, and we said, we want to do another a couple of hours. Is that okay? They said, yes, go right ahead. So thank you, LastPass. We couldn't do it without you. LastPass.com/Twitter.
The new version of Messages has everything you want from a Mac app.
This is a really sticky point. The differences between Messages on iOS and Messages on Mac OS, and they want to unify these, and they're still not together.
An integrated Find helps navigate and communicate efficiently. With Catalyst, you get a familiar experience on both the Mac and iOS, so you can use new additions like pinned conversations, inline replies, and mentions, along with existing.
It's interesting that this most of this keynote is from Andreas Venker, who is the vice president of software engineering at Apple.
The next version of Swift Playgrounds, which we are planning to ship later this year, also shine in the new Mac idiom. It fully takes advantage of the new Mac look and feel with a simplified toolbar and
these
full height sidebar.
Toolbars
adjustable text sizes.
I'm sure I like
streamlined
them.
Editing with popovers and the Mac system pickers. Like Messages, Swift Playgrounds will support multiple windows, making it feel right at home on the large screen of the Mac. If you're an iOS developer and have not yet considered creating a Mac Catalyst app, now is a fantastic time to do so. So, Big Sur is starting the transition to Apple Silicon, is packed with new features, includes a much-improved Mac Catalyst, and on top of all of that, has a great new look. It's incredible how much has changed in this release. Big Sur is a huge step forward for the Mac.
In fact,
so much of the general architecture has improved that we are giving macOS a new number.
A new number?
Big Sur
macOS 11?
Is macOS version 11. Because it really is a new Mac operating system all around. This is such an exciting year for the Mac. There has never been a better time to be a Mac developer. And we hope you're as excited as we are about the deep changes we are making.
This is not macOS 10
for the platform.
16. This is macOS 11.
Let's talk about the great improvements we are bringing to iPadOS.
Make a note of that. We'll have more from the WWDC State of the Union keynote. This is really exciting. But I want to thank our sponsors for making it possible. LastPass, as always, Twit News brought to you by LastPass. LastPass is the tool you need to prepare for the unexpected. What happened? All of a sudden, everybody started working from home. If you're in IT, maybe that was a little scary for you. Suddenly, employees are going home into an unknown world using, you know, your bank accounts, your databases, your websites. They have access to everything out of their house. That's why I hope you're using LastPass. If not, don't worry. LastPass can be deployed quickly in the midst of any crisis to ensure your business keeps running smoothly and every employee login is secure. Of course, it's the best enterprise-grade password management out there. I've used it for more than a decade. We've used it at Twit as our business password manager for more than a few years. It gives you, of course, all the things you want, but also oversight of shadow IT, enforceable policies across all password protected accounts. We require, for example, two-factor in our master passwords. We have minimum standards for the master password, things like that. Employees love using it because it makes life easier. It just autofills passwords. It makes it easy for them to share too. Even when they're home, they can share passwords securely using LastPass. They don't have to call or put it on a post-it note or mail it. They just share it in LastPass and boom, it's there. They add multi-factor authentication, not just the biometric, the face or the ID or the touch ID, the fingerprint or the face recognition. It adds contextual factors like geolocation, IP address, and more to make sure that it's the right people using the right resources. And employees really love this new feature in LastPass, single sign-on. More than 1,200 single sign-on apps. I mean, you don't even need a password. You log in, you press a button on your phone, said, yep, that's me, and you're in. More convenient for employees, more secure for you. Single sign-on, of course, also lets you manage it in a centralized view, so IT always has insight into who's accessing what from where. That's what you want. And, of course, LastPass uses state-of-the-art best practices to protect your password vault. It never sends or stores the master password. LastPass doesn't have it. Only you have your master password. That's good because if LastPass can't get to your data, neither can hackers, government, anybody else who might want to. Encryption happens exclusively at device level. That's phone, that's laptop, that's a desktop. I have LastPass on every browser, on every device. I use macOS, Windows, Linux, iOS, iPadOS, even on your smart TV. And that's important. The encryption, the best there is. 256-bit AES, same kind used by banks and the military. So you know your stuff is safe and only you can decrypt your data, only at device level. It's a seamless workflow for your employees. It's responsibility, oversight, authentication. Your IT department will really appreciate. I just think LastPass is the only way to go in business. We're glad we switched, especially when we start sending employees home. You will be too. Let LastPass make your remote work simple and secure. Visit LastPass.com/twit to find out how they can help your business stay productive and secure no matter what. LastPass.com/twit. Now let's head back to WWDC as we continue the State of the Union. Thank you, LastPass. This also was very exciting.
This has already been a huge year for iPad. Just a few months ago, we added trackpad support alongside the new Magic Keyboard, continuing iPad's multi-year evolution into a powerful platform for the future of computing. And only a few short years ago, iPadOS gained support for drag and drop, a familiar interaction completely rethought for a multi-touch experience.
You really see now, kind of all, and I felt this for at least a year or two. The piece is moving in this direction. It's very interesting. This is a casebook study, a business school study, in how to make a huge transition with your company in a way that is as painless to both developers and users as possible.
And of course, we added new APIs so that you can bring them to your apps as well. Let's look at a few examples, including
software companies, especially platform companies, are really an interesting position because you really have two stakeholders. You have your buyers, your users, but you also, it's very important, you have your developers, and they have to come along for the ride. If they don't go along for the ride, you're not going to get the customers.
But with just a swipe, they can expand to a three-column layout on every size iPad. This three-column view is even available in portrait orientation, making it easier than ever to browse and organize content, even on the smallest screen. Adding a sidebar to your app is easy, with all the new functionality available in existing components that you already use. A sidebar can also simplify navigation in your app, like in Photos, where it includes rows for library and albums, which were previously found in a tab bar along the bottom.
But yeah, this is a good idea. You have enough real estate now to do this.
By bringing all the key parts of your app to one place,
sidebars are back.
Sidebars can make your app's deeper functionality.
They were out of fashion for a while, briefly. They disappeared from iTunes, and now they're back.
With support for displaying hierarchical content in an outline, including collapsible items. These new outlines build on API you're already familiar with in both SwiftUI and UIKit, which have been enhanced to support these new appearances and behaviors. It's really easy to add a sidebar that perfectly matches other apps on the system, and it can help your app take even better advantage of iPad's large screen. You'll also find some great opportunities to improve data entry in your apps. We've added a number of new pickers, like the brand new date picker that lets you choose a date by just finding it on a calendar.
So for those of you not familiar with macOS development, this is
iPad screen real estate.
All part of Xcode is you get a variety of built-in tools that, for the most part, Apple wants you to use. You could always write your own picker, but it's almost always easier to use Apple's. And users will like it because they're used to it. They know it. They understand it.
You'll also find a new color picker API, which brings a standard way to pick colors across all apps. It's really easy to adopt,
and it provides the heritage standard behaviors like a place to save your favorite colors for later use,
and an eyedropper to pick a color right off the screen.
Things like this built into the macOS ROM or the Macintosh ROM.
As you use the new iPadOS apps, you'll notice even more refinements that make interacting.
Every operating system does it. Windows does it too. But
there are some great opportunities to enhance your apps in similar ways.
In Windows, there's a lot more variety.
Menus are a great way to organize common actions.
Apple's always pushed developers to use these features and made it easy to do so.
These new menus, and I think you're going to love them as much as I do. Everything we've discussed was designed for iPad, but if you choose Mac Catalyst to bring your app to the Mac, these new APIs are also designed to look great on macOS. And as you look deeper, you'll find many refined interactions.
Again, you see the benefit of Apple providing these widgets. They can make sure that they're compatible so that you don't even have to think about it.
These changes it just works. Small, but they add up to a much more powerful iPad experience. And finding these opportunities in your apps can be easy, too. We looked for ways to make deeper functionality more discoverable, to streamline navigation, and to remove modal states. And I'm sure that you can find opportunities to do so in your apps as well. These are just some of the enhancements that we've made to apps across
iOS. Doug is saying in the chat room that Intel-based Big Sur will be macOS 10.16.
It's always
Max Apple Silicon-based Big Sur will be macOS 11. That's interesting. That would be a very good way of distinguishing. I hope they do that.
iPad's capabilities are extended even further through its powerful hardware and accessories. And earlier this year, we announced a new iPad Pro that comes equipped with a LiDAR scanner. Now, the LiDAR scanner gives iPad Pro an incredibly precise way of measuring distance.
Yeah, we've wondered what that's for.
And it paves the way for developers to build entirely new experiences. The LiDAR scanner uses direct time of flight to project light onto objects up to 5 meters away. And that light is then reflected back onto our custom-designed sensor. And by measuring how long that process takes, we obtain precise distance measurements of your surroundings. Now, you can access this information through APIs in ARKit. The first is scene geometry, which provides you with a 3D mesh of the scene. We also use a neural network to identify the planes and surfaces in the scene, like the floors, the walls, the doors, and the windows.
Have we seen a lot of apps take advantage of that? The problem is it's only in one iPad
captured by the LiDAR scanner
model. You know?
And what we see here is a 3D depth map that was created using the output from the Depth API. Combined, these APIs bring a new level of realism to all AR experiences on iPad Pro. Now, all virtual objects are placed instantly. Motion capture and pupil occlusion is dramatically improved. And with measurements captured by the LiDAR scanner, virtual objects can be accurately placed in front or behind items in the world. It brings a whole new level of realism.
So this is the State of the Union, platform State of the Union that Apple does right after the big keynote at WWDC every year. This is the more technical of the two. We thought, gosh, with this transition to Apple Silicon, we really would want to watch this. And I have to say, it's been interesting. This is probably the least interesting part, a feature only available in one model of the iPad, never in a Mac, not really in an iPhone particularly.
Making iPad Pro a powerful tool for manufacturers, architects, and creative professionals. Now, another great way to extend the capabilities of iPad is with Apple Pencil. Apple Pencil is an amazing tool that turns iPad into a powerful drawing and note-taking device. This year, we've added great new capabilities to make handwriting on iPad just as easy and powerful as typed text. Many of these improvements will automatically work in your app without having to do any additional work. So let's take a look at Pencil's awesome new capabilities in action. Here's a sample app that we've built that helps students practice their handwriting skills. And what's great about Apple Pencil is that it lets you work in a free-form way. You can just start writing anywhere. Writing with Pencil works in any standard UI text field. We've added UI text fields here so that students can write their name at the top of the assignment. And with a new iPad OS, these text fields automatically.
There now are going to be some big hardware differences between Mac OS and iPad OS. You don't have touch, you don't have a pencil.
Now let's get started.
How they're going to handle that.
Notice that as soon as the pencil is picked up, these beautiful drawing tools appear in the drawing canvas. And because our app uses Pencil Kit, these beautiful tools are provided automatically. The new Pencil Kit makes handwriting as powerful as typed text. So you can select handwritten text using the exact same gestures that you would for typed text. We've also added a new gesture called drag to select, which allows you to select by sweeping the pencil over entire paragraphs, a line, or even a single letter. This makes copying handwritten notes a snap, and it's a sneaky way to get through this assignment quickly. Now, under the hood, drawing with Pencil uses the new Canvas API. These new capabilities have been added directly to Pencil Kit, so if you're already using it in your iPad app, you'll inherit all of these great new features for free. And this includes the color picker, which makes your apps and this homework a little more fun. Now, one of your
biggest requests for Pencil Kit is
the ability to get stroke data as Pencil is moving across the screen. And I'm very happy to say that this capability is now available in Pencil Kit. Using the new Stroke API, you get access to the important attributes of the drawing, like angle, pressure, drawing ink, and exact location, grouped into strokes and updated as the user draws. This capability is perfect for our handwriting app, so let's practice. The student improves their handwriting by tracing these letters. and it was easy to write this app. We simply used PencilKit to show how the pencil is moving across the intended lines. We also added comparison logic so that our app can choose to let the student know that they're not quite tracing the letters as closely as they should. It helps them improve as they practice. The app is built for Pencil, and thanks to the new Drawing Policy API, scrolling with your
finger. I think most teachers aren't going to want kids to learn handwriting with an Apple Pencil. It just doesn't duplicate a pen or pencil in the real world. It's too slick.
Some for freeform drawing and others for text entry, which specifies where to apply Scribble. Now, as you can see, these new updates to iPadOS and PencilKit make handwriting as powerful as typed text. Scribble offers a seamless writing experience in any of your app's text fields, and the new Stroke API delivers real-time drawing information, enabling PencilKit apps to offer new experiences like annotation, markup, and recognition. Now, these are just some of the amazing new features that continue to push what's possible on iPad. We can't wait to show you more of the exciting new iPad features this week, and we'll see how all of you customize your apps for iPad.
And of course, Scribble is very interesting. But now, you know, features that are unique to the iPad and iOS.
iOS 14 is an awesome update that is jam-packed with new features for you to transform your apps. Two of the most exciting developer features in iOS 14 are widgets and app clips, both of which have been designed to extend your app's experience and delight your users. So first, let's talk about widgets. You know, widgets have always been a great way to convey information at a glance. And in iOS 14, we've completely reimagined this experience, creating all new widgets that take design to the next level and use on-device intelligence to show users the right information at the right time. They're more beautiful, data-rich, and now they come in three sizes. The new widgets are available in the Today view. And for the first time, we're making them available on the home screen. Now, users can get at-a-glance information from your apps whenever they go home, a space that users visit many times a day. The new widgets are written in SwiftUI, making it easy to share code across iPhone, iPad, and Mac. New widgets that work seamlessly across all three platforms. Now, displaying widgets on the home screen means that they're always visible and always running. So performance and memory efficiency really matter.
Yeah, I mean, clearly the idea is you'll want an iPad as well as a Mac. You want an iPhone and an iPad and a Mac and a watch. You want them all.
Now, to solve this for our new widgets, we leverage SwiftUI's ability to describe your widget's appearance separate from when and how it is rendered. And we've added a new method to serialize a SwiftUI view into an archive. Now, this archive is very lightweight and can be rendered asynchronously on the GPU to ensure great performance of the home screen. The new widget API, WidgetKit, is structured around timeline entries, each of which contains one of these new efficient SwiftUI archives, as well as time and date, and a relevance score. Each timeline entry is rendered on demand when it's both timely and visible to the user. So when your widget becomes visible, we can efficiently construct and render a full view hierarchy from this archive without needing to run your app's code. Your app typically provides multiple timeline entries, so the process is repeated throughout the day without requiring your app to be constantly running. Now, each widget the user has configured provides its own set of timeline entries, and the system renders each of them at the right time. And to help optimize the use of space on the home screen, users can stack widgets. Stacks come in all sizes, and the user can easily flip through each widget that is part of the stack.
They talked about stacks, but they didn't show that folding up accordion thing.
Using on-device intelligence, iOS surfaces the right widget to the top of the stack at just the right time. And this is where the relevance score that you provide in your widget's timeline entries comes into play. It is your signal to the system that something of high interest is happening, such as this news alert and this weather warning. Now, thanks to SwiftUI, we've created this efficient and intelligent widget experience that is unique to every user. And now, I'd like to show you a demo. Before we dive into Xcode, let me show you how easy it is to lay out widgets on your home screen. I've already customized my home screen with some of my favorite widgets. You'll notice weather, everyone's favorite topic of conversation, and my Emoji Rangers widget, which shows my panda character in an online multiplayer game. I configure these widgets in the widget
emoji
gallery.
Range?
Each of these views in the widget gallery are entries that you've created in code. The system knows how to display the timeline entry by writing it to disk to just-in-time render this UI. This technology allows us to create this WYSIWYG gallery for users. This technology also allows us to create a smart stack, which your users can flip through. In addition, the system will intelligently analyze all timeline entries from widgets in a stack and know when to surface the most relevant information for each user. For example, the system knows when there's a relevant calendar event coming up, and the stack can intelligently rotate to that widget. There, now I have my widgets beautifully organized on my home screen. Now, this widget was actually created by my team. We built this widget so that we can see our character's status in the game. Now let's dive into Xcode so that I can show you how we created our Emoji Rangers widget. In our iOS game, I define my widget in my WidgetKit extension. To define a widget, all you need to do is conform to the widget protocol. Conforming to the widget protocol returns a widget configuration to the system, which consists of our kind of widget and our timeline provider. Here, I've created a single entry, and I can return that using the snapshot function. Snapshot is used when the system wants to display a single entry. And I've also created a series of entries in the timeline function, which tell the system when to display each individual entry based on the date that I've defined. This is really the engine of my widget. All I need to do is define a widget and return a timeline. To tell the system when to surface my widget, I define a relevance score. If I have multiple timeline entries, all relevance scores I provide will be weighed against all other relevant scores that I've provided, and the system will dynamically display the entry that is most relevant to my users. This widget is currently showing my own character in the game, but what I really want to see is how other players are doing and how I'm competing. WidgetKit provides a lightweight configuration ability leveraging the Intense framework. Developers simply pass in the parameters to be configured, and the framework provides the configuration UI. Now, my team has already started to build this out, which you can see here. They are using the Intense timeline provider to generate a new timeline based on the Intense values, which are really the answer to the question we're asking. This lets me choose which character to see in my widget. Now I can enter edit mode and edit my widget, which brings up this configuration UI. This UI is created for me by the system. I didn't have to lift a finger to create this view. And just by using the power of Intense, the system can dynamically create this UI on my behalf. Now I can even select my teammates' characters to view their status in my widget. This is how you define a widget that is easily customizable and can be read by the system to intelligently surface the most relevant information from your app. Now, these are just a few of the amazing possibilities of WidgetKit. Next, let's look at some of the other exciting features in iOS 14.
We're also introducing App Clips. An app clip is a small part of your app that is light and fast and easy to discover, so your users can quickly get what they need right when they need it.
I feel like Darren might
Everything
have been an
about
Apple
app
a
clips
long time.
Is designed for speed. They start with this cart, which quickly pops up. It's auto-generated by Apple from metadata you submitted to the App Store, so users will find it familiar and safe. And as soon as you see this card, behind the scenes, the app clip is already downloading. And with just a tap, you can launch the app clip.
He was the technical lead for System 7.
You don't need to enter credit card numbers, because app clips can use Apple Pay for payments. You don't have to manually log into an account.
Okay.
You can take advantage of sign-in with Apple.
Wow. He has
app
been there a long time.
App clips won't clutter your home screen and will only stay around as long as you need them. But you can easily launch recently used app clips from the new app library.
That's pretty cool.
And discovery is key. App clips are all about getting to a part of the app at the moment you need it. So it was critical that we made them really easy to discover. You'll be able to open them from apps you use every day and places in the real world. And when a user sees our new Apple-designed app clip code, they will know there's an app clip waiting for them. And the great thing about app clips for you, the developer, is that they're made from a part of your
He's
app.
He's had that shirt since
you
System 7,
You use the
7,
full
actually,
power of the SDK. Make your clip as small as possible.
It might be a macOS 9 shirt. Instantly. I don't know.
Leave out analytics libraries you don't really need. Do that, and you won't be even close to the 10-megabyte limit. App clips can present notifications within 8 hours of opening one. like reminding you that your parking spot is about to expire. There's even an AppClip-specific API that lets you verify the AppClip launched exactly where you expect it to be. An AppClip is the best way to introduce users to what your full app offers, so we made it really easy for them to upgrade to it. You can prompt the user to get the full version of your app at the time that makes the most sense for your app.
This is completely dependent on adoption by third parties. So,
over to the full app as part of that.
Google announced something very similar. Nobody did it, so we'll see.
Fruta lets you see a menu of delicious smoothies.
Apple might have more cloud.
Place orders and explore smoothie recipes. Placing orders works by invoking Fruta.
I think maybe cut back on
the
smoothies a little, Darren.
Let's make an app clip for this ordering experience. First, in Xcode, I'll choose new target and choose app clip to create a new app clip target.
Oh, it's right in there.
Next, I'll select the classes and asset catalog that are needed for ordering and add our app clip to their target membership. Now, let's build and run.
Now, 10 megabytes is not a lot. Not a lot of room for your resources.
Great. Here's my app
fast.
Clip. It preserves my app ordering experience.
They don't know Apple Silicon.
You'll notice that my app clip asks permission to send notifications to customers when their order is complete. We could streamline this by using 8-hour notification permission, exclusive to app clips and designed for light and fast experiences. To do this, I'll add a check.
Interesting.
If my app clip has that 8-hour permission, I won't request authorization, so the user won't be prompted. I also want to configure a storekit overlay to let the user get my app. When the order is ready, it's the perfect time to present it, along with an explanation of what they'll get in the full app.
Well, that was pretty quick. A couple of lines of code.
And there you have it. Now my customers have a streamlined experience in my app clip, and when they're done ordering, they can get my app and take the recipe home. And that's app clips.
And no
permissions
needed.
In a variety of ways. Built from a small part of your app.
We've come a long way since System 7, haven't we, Darren?
With features like Sign In with Apple and Apple Pay, user privacy is built right in. In fact, privacy is incredibly important to our users. With our newest products, we're making it easier to give users transparency and control with respect to their data. You now declare privacy information about your apps right on the product page in the App Store. To do this, simply go to App Store Connect and answer a few questions about how you collect, share, and protect your users' data. The highlights will be presented to potential users right on the App Store across all platforms. These are just some of the new technologies for you to take advantage of in iOS 14.
Last year was a very big year for Apple Watch developers. In watchOS 6, we introduced independent apps, the App Store on Apple Watch, and of course, the first ever native UI framework for watchOS, SwiftUI. In watchOS 7, we're giving you a new place to use your SwiftUI skills.
She's wearing
and your
three Apple Watches.
With SwiftUI complications. And we're giving you more space on the face by letting you create multiple complications for each family.
By giving you multiple
watches. You now have
incredible
flexibility to provide beautiful and timely information when the user raises their wrist. We're also making it easier than ever to get your app and all its information-rich complications into users' hands with Watch Face Sharing, which integrates App Store purchase and download right into the sharing flow. Let me show you some of these cool new features with an app I've been working on to help my friends in Hawaii track the humpback whales that visit in the spring.
I just can't choose which Apple Watch band I want
to
wear today. I'll wear them all.
Travel's pretty restricted right now. In my Whale Watch app, you can see recent whale sightings from several viewing stations around Maui. And you can also submit a sighting if you happen to spot a pod. Now I'd like to make it easier for me to see what's happening with the whales from here, and for my friends to log sightings themselves right from the watch face. It's super easy to describe the complications I'm creating and the families they support. First, I'll offer complications that display data about the most recent sightings for the various viewing stations around the island, similar to how World Clock offers a complication for each of the cities you've selected in the app. I can do that by looping through the list of stations and creating a complication descriptor for each one. As you can see, each complication uses the station name as a unique identifier. This makes it possible to have each complication navigate to a different part of my app. For example, I can have each station-specific complication go to the detail screen for that viewing station. Next, I'll create a complication for quickly logging a whale sighting. Again, I can use the unique identifier to navigate directly to the screen for logging a sighting when the user taps on it. And I can also use it to provide a different template for this complication than for the station-specific ones while supporting the same families. Finally, I'll create a third descriptor for my season data complication. With the other complications, I'm supporting all families, but this one's more complex, so it only makes sense in the large rectangular space. I'll finish up here by calling the handler with my descriptors array sorted in the order I want the complications to appear when the user edits their watch face.
This code looks complicated, but actually, it really is only complicated because you have to understand all of the API calls. You have to. It's actually really simple code.
Whale sightings across the island in the app, so I'll use that. As you can see, that's as easy as wrapping the SwiftUI view in one of the new view templates. I'm using a version of my chart
almost
view,
all that so
the
typing
font size adjusted down a bit,
is referring
and populating
to
it with data from the past week, which is a nice digestible amount of data for a watch face.
Library
to see how
functions
will look,
and codes
I'll use my favorite new feature of
object methods and object
previews. You may have noticed I was handling all the different complication families in that giant switch statement. Now I can see what those complications look like on different watch sizes and in full color or tinted by writing a bit of SwiftUI.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of
And of course, previews update live. So if I don't like how my complications look, I can adjust the code and see what impact that has. Moving to my watch, you can see how the complications
why I really don't
I built
like
would
writing,
appear to a user. And where I can customize the complications
OS specific or hardware specific code because there's some really a lot of it is I used to have the whole Mac ROM reference all the whole library there and you'd be okay what is that what's that called oh yeah
my app for me would appreciate a face that includes her favorite water sports along with my whale watch complications so I'll make a quick face with surfing and
it's cool that you
could
do this
sighting data from the whale watch station closest to her favorite beach and the log a sighting complication in case she's
almost all
a
the
lot
effort
of whales
is knowing and understanding.
She'll get a text from
the,
me with
you know the methods
the
and the
and when she taps on
variables and the calls,
the opportunity to get any apps she doesn't already have from the App Store. When she adds the face,
Swift
to my
is
faces,
as you were seeing there very much like you know face. It's Objective C, which is its predecessor and. It's a pretty straightforward, you know, if you've used Python or C or Objective-C, you'll feel fairly comfortable with it.
It will help your customers connect.
It can be written functionally, which is nice.
And for you and your customers to share
and it looks like
awesome
it's pretty strongly typed.
We've seen an overview of the most important changes to our operating systems. And the best way to take advantage of the new functionality is to get the new version of our Xcode developer tools. The first thing you'll notice about Xcode 12 is how it really shows off the new look and feel of macOS Big Sur.
It's how it has
a
hammer.
Cleaner and more expressive UI. The modernized toolbar puts controls right where I need them. And the icons now have a fresh new appearance.
You could see if you look at that, it looks a lot.
The font size of the navigator now matches the system sidebar setting. And I can adjust the size separately too to get the look I like. Documents now show through under the toolbar. And inspectors have been updated with new spacing and layouts. So Xcode 12, it's really gorgeous. I can get a simple and clean layout and work quickly. For example, I can maximize my workspace for code. Going
I bet
into
you
full screen,
people like working use the slide in the same space with this guy. He's so nice. Quiet.
Or even perform a search to move throughout my project. Now, I have something I'm really excited to show you. Document tabs.
Me too.
Document tabs appear in the familiar space across the top of the editor and are a great way
to
organize my work.
Can you say document tabs?
I can use the dynamic tab, shown in italics, for most of my navigation. Any file I select in the navigator opens in this tab. When I find a file I want to keep open, I can double-click on it or hold down Option when I click to have it open in a new tab. And this works great, too, with actions like jump to definition or with open quickly. I can also open any kind of content in a
tappy little document,
such as
tabs.
The commit view from the branch I'm working on, or a build log I might want to reference later. So tabs let me easily manage the set of content I want to work on. I can also use many tabs too. For example, adding to the test classes I already have. I'll use the file menu to split my editor, and then drag a group of tests into the tab bar. And now I can work through all the files one by one. And when I'm done working on them, I can close them all at once by closing the split. Document tabs built into Xcode are fast and fun to use.
I could do that in Emacs. It's just a 6-key
providing a great way to develop for all Apple platforms. Xcode's new SwiftUI app templates include everything I need to create common code to share across platforms and then tailor for each UI idiom. These groups and their targets are created automatically in new projects and help me keep good layering as my project grows. Keeping an app working great on all platforms requires testing, and Xcode 12 makes achieving broad coverage even easier. For tests which have been factored into reusable functions, I can now navigate through the nested calls, just as I would when debugging, to find the source of a problem. My tests can now evaluate the responsiveness of my UI by working with animations. UI tests can specify the velocity to use for scrolls and presses, and performance tests can capture diagnostic information. I can review details such as the animation duration, frame rate, even the number of UI hitches that occurred.
It's all profiling information. That's great.
Is with StoreKit. The new StoreKit test framework lets me specify in-app purchase and subscription information right in my project, so I can test without needing to stage or deploy my app. And working with StoreKit is now interactive. Xcode has a new StoreKit transaction manager that shows details for apps I'm debugging. Here's my current session running in the simulator. So now I can select an item, buy it, and confirm the purchase, and then review the transaction in Xcode. I can even refund it. And my
so much of this is provided by Apple.
So now developing apps
that your code really is just glue as much as anything else.
Of course, creating an app is way more fun than testing. And we've made working with Swift and SwiftUI even more awesome. In the source editor,
but you should be testing.
And especially using both.
Always be testing.
SwiftUI previews have a new toolbar across the top that speed up common actions. Here, I can duplicate the preview and then use the inspector to change the appearance to be dark. This makes working with my previews
Like
designing a UI control.
Very nice.
I can now quickly my views by double-clicking in the preview.
This is why you need a Pro Display XDR.
And smartly selects the content to change.
A lot of real estate.
Adding modifiers is faster, too. The inspector now recommends modifiers based on my selection, showing them here at the top of the list. And I can search for modifiers, too, to find the ones I need. Code completion with Swift will feel totally new. The results come back up to 12 times faster, and a simplified presentation makes it easy to find what I'm looking for, particularly amongst similar results. And code completion goes way beyond just helping me type. It helps me get what I want. The same placeholders I get from the library that compile with no additional input now appear for code completion results too. This means I can make quick additions and customize later, keeping my code and previews compiling the whole time. Along with the tools helping enhance my UI, my UIs can now enhance the tools. Views and modifiers in my project can now appear in the library and with their own default content by just implementing a protocol. And they can do so from Swift packages too. Swift packages now support all the necessary components, including building asset catalogs and resources and localizing content for use with SwiftUI. So now I can create SwiftUI controls in packages, design them with previews, and add them to the library, all with just a little code. So I can switch back to my view, open the library, and find my control in with the others. And then just add it to my UI and double-click to customize. It is now easier than ever for me to create my own controls, use them in all my projects, and share them with others. There is a lot to discover
really
in Xcode 12.
Oh, and I notice it adjusted both views.
Document tabs, new testing functionality with StoreKit, tons of workflow additions for designing great apps, and so much more. And these all build on top of some dramatic improvements we've made this year with Swift and SwiftUI.
With last year's introduction of SwiftUI, we took a huge step toward a new way of building apps. We started with a strong foundation of core infrastructure and components and deep integration with our existing frameworks. The full surface of mature frameworks like AppKit and UIKit can't be covered all at once, so we're taking our time to get it right. We're prioritizing source stability while making the API more powerful over time. As a result, this year's SwiftUI API improvements are all completely additive. Code you've already written will continue to compile and run with this year's releases with no migration required. That's as important to us as it is for you, because Swift and SwiftUI are playing a central role across the Apple ecosystem. We're evolving them together and creating a set of APIs
you're glad if you learn Swift now.
To build everything from the system features, like the new Control Center and Notification Center on macOS, to entire multi-platform features, like the new widgets. We've even gone as far as implementing the new Color Picker API in UIKit using SwiftUI. This extensive usage requires great performance, and the language and frameworks teams have worked together to achieve some dramatic improvements
this
year.
Yeah, no more writing to the metal, huh?
You'll notice faster launch and layout, smaller code size and memory usage, and more. One of the most important pieces of SwiftUI's performance is the layout system. Many of you have been asking...
I haven't written any Swift code, except I played with the Playgrounds, but I haven't written any Swift code.
We didn't include one last year because we had a bigger vision that we wanted to pursue. We saw an opportunity to support high-performance collections without an entirely different set of APIs. You can already build complex layouts like this list of photos with SwiftUI today, but large collections can be expensive. This sample contains 20,000 photos and consumes over 500 megabytes of memory. With this year's releases, you can simply add the word lazy to your existing stack view to enable faster load times and dramatically reduced memory usage for large collections.
Nice.
This same 20,000 photo sample still enables fast scrolling to any point in the list, but now it loads...
Swift's not verbose. I don't think it's verbose. Memory. I think what's verbose is you see all of these, as I said.
This is a great example.
There's a lot of library stuff.
Swift UI's declarative syntax. You can
Swift looks very much like any, modern language.
You can compose 10 views or 10,000. Combined with new support for switch and if-let statements in the expanded Swift function builder syntax, you can now efficiently display large, complex collections of views.
I mean, you see switch, case,
our focus with SwiftUI last year was to enable you
struct
to add
defines,
new views to your
all the other stuff
while sharing more of that code
is,
across all our platforms, all supported by
Apple
integration
library stuff.
UI frameworks. This year, we've of course enhanced and expanded on that foundation with new API covering things like outline views and paging views. And we even began adding SwiftUI interfaces
to other
frameworks like
MapKit and AVNet. Java or C. Or
we have some bigger enhancements as well.
It's less, a lot less verbose than Java.
Today, we've talked about many technologies to help you bring your existing apps to new places. But with Swift and SwiftUI, we know that you'll also want to build brand new experiences and deploy them everywhere. So we're also taking the next big step, expanding SwiftUI's Learn Once, Write Anywhere story with API that lets you deliver fully native experiences across Apple's platforms, starting from your first line of code.
See, that's what's really attractive.
SwiftUI now includes an incredibly concise way to describe your app's structure in just a few lines of code. It supports common elements like windows and toolbars, but also platform-specific features like menus and preference windows. It's a common set of app structure APIs for all Apple platforms that also supports the features that are unique to each one.
You're gonna be using
Matthew
the,
showed you the new
switch,
shared app
the
template.
The switch is a lot.
But let me show you what makes it work. To give you a sense of how powerful this will be, let's build a simple document-based text editor. You'll notice the API is designed around Swift's new at main feature, which identifies the main entry point of your application. Apps use the same declarative structure that you're familiar with from SwiftUI views, enabling your text editor's entire interface to be expressed in just four lines of code. To start, we'll add a document group, which manages creating and opening files. Of course, a document needs
He's
a view
pasting.
To display and edit its content, so we'll add a simple plain text editor and connect it to our model. With just these few lines, we can build and run, and we already have a fully functional multi-document app with all the behaviors that you expect.
And there you have it. There's the
if
real
If you start
advantage.
Typing, you'll see it automatically marks
you're
the
You're using
document
so much library code.
To be saved.
That your code is just glue code.
Support for undo.
It's all
the
it's all declarative.
Fully
it's all
to each platform, providing standard behaviors
put
like
this
open
here.
Panels on macOS. And on iPhone and iPad, you get a standard file browser. Of course,
Look
it's
at that.
Also easy to add platform-specific functionality. For example, we can add a preference window on macOS with just a few more lines
this
of code.
This I want to see. This has got to be
a settings
a switch.
And fill it with a view that I created earlier.
If, okay, using
Composing
if.
The different parts of an app is just as easy as composing Swift UI views.
Oh, that's interesting. It's a macro.
If we run it again, we'll find the preferences window we expect, brought up with a preferences menu item that was automatically added in the right place and configured with the appropriate key command.
Or is it maybe it's a
Swift UI's declarative app structure can provide appropriate platform native behaviors.
It's a compiler directive. That's what it is.
And just like with views, you can learn these new application APIs once
and
then apply them
everywhere.
That makes
sense.
We're following the same development philosophy.
Instead of doing switches in your code, you make your code simpler. You just have compiler directives saying, okay, we're compiling for Mac OS, do this.
This is the next big step in bringing you a language and API to build fully native experiences across Apple's platforms without compromising on what makes each platform unique, all using Swift and Swift UI.
And that concludes our overview of the most important announcements for Apple platform developers this year.
Thank you, Anders.
The new releases are full of new features. There are so many new capabilities and APIs that we didn't even have time to talk about in the State of the Union. Such as the new ways CoreML allows you to encrypt machine learning models and to deploy them via iCloud. Or tvOS, which continues to be the best platform for the big screen. Now with AirPlay support for 4K HDR streams.
I wonder how cross-platform tvOS is. Patrick, you've written tvOS code.
Functionalities. As usual, we're also making developer previews of all our operating system and Xcode releases available to you for download on developer.apple.com. If you're a Mac developer, don't forget to sign up for the Quick Start program and apply for a DTK with Apple Silicon there as well.
I'm going to.
To learn even more about all the new technologies we've unveiled today, please take advantage of the more than 100 sessions available throughout the week. We can't wait to see
open
how
to everybody,
you are
which
going
is
to
fantastic.
Use the new APIs and technologies and enjoy your great apps. Finally, here at Apple, we've always drawn strength from the creativity of our global developer community. To celebrate this, we've made a film comprised of images you all shared with us from your homes as you continue to create the work that inspires us all. Thank you. Be well, and I hope you enjoy the weekend.
No, I'm teasing. I love you, Anders. Really good stuff. This is an extremely exciting time to be in the Apple world. And I think if you're an Apple developer, you've got to be excited by the opportunities presented by the new Apple Silicon. The idea that cross-platform development is really just a very straightforward, something you're already doing in many ways. And that gives you such a massive customer base. And this is one of the things that's always held macOS back a little bit. They've only had, a few percentage points of the total operating systems market. But we're in a new world right now. When you have a billion iPhones, you have millions of Mac machines, you have tens of millions of iPads, you've got a giant market. And development is similar for all of them. It's a huge opportunity. It really is a huge opportunity. And I think that's really the good story Apple has to tell these days. So I'm very glad we could get together and watch WWDC, the State of the Union. Usually I watch those in the privacy of my own home. Oh, wait a minute. I am. I want to thank John Slonina, Jammer B, for sticking around a little longer than he was planning to so that we could stream this. And, of course, thanks to our friends at LastPass, who make all of our live news coverage possible. Thanks to you for joining us this week or today. This has been a really fun day with two keynotes from Apple's WWDC. There's lots more to come. We'll break it all down tomorrow. iOS today at 9 a.m. and, of course, at 11 a.m. Pacific, Mac Break Weekly. Renee, Andy, and Lori and I will have lots to talk about as we get a chance to kind of assimilate all the things we've learned. It is a very new era for Apple, and I think a very exciting era. Apple's keep knocking it out of the park, right out of Apple Park into our homes. So thank you for joining me for this Apple News, Twit News special. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.